What's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
And here we go, Digital Adele back with another Hoops Profile Beyond the Backboard podcast for you with my co-host, Matt Hanifin. How are you doing today, Matt?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good. Trying to get through the week. It's Thursday. How about yourself, man? How you doing?
Now, I hear you there, man. I am ready for the weekend. I can't wait. There's a lot of basketball to be talked about today, so I'm excited to do that. There's a prospect that we haven't talked about yet. Another one of those guys that's kind of international. Dink Pate. So we're going to be talking about him. We're going to talk about the big game tonight. Michigan versus Rutgers. Danny Wolf, who the Miami Heat happened to have had scouts at his game, the Michigan game. And then also they have scouted Rutgers, as told by one of the associates on off the floor. So I don't know if that was public knowledge. I don't know if I should have said that, but
that's fine.
Anyway, moving on. So anyway, it's a big matchup. Danny Wolf versus Ace Bailey, Dylan Harper. Really excited to see those teams. Not great team for Rutgers, but great players in Ace Bailey and Dylan Harper. So can't wait to talk them. But I do want to talk Dink Pate. I know you haven't watched him, but...
It's been very, like, very small portions. When we do this, you at least try to watch several different games before you do an eval. I am not at that point. But yes, I have watched him to a certain extent, a small extent, a minor extent, so on and so forth.
So it's probably similar to where I'm at. I've only watched one game, and so that one game, my impression, the first impression was not great.
Before you go, like, sorry to interrupt, was it recent or was it like early in the season?
His very last game.
Okay.
Against the Spurs G League team with Harrison Ingram, Jamar Bouye, and those guys.
Heat legend,
Jamar Bouye. So here's where I'm at with Dink Pate. I'm going to set the scene in case people don't know who he is. He's a 18-year-old kid that'll be 19 years old on draft night. He's playing for the Mexico City G League team. 6'8", 210 pounds. They list him as a small forward. I see him more as like a ball handling guard, to be honest. Like, his best attribute is his actual handle. Not the way he moves, not his burst, but just his handle itself. What I saw that was really interesting is they didn't put really much of anything on his plate. He stood in the corner most of the game. They'd run curl actions for him every once in a while. He gets some on ball usage sparingly sprinkled in. But I just didn't like what I saw. So 6'8", 210, his jump shot is ugly. I mean, it's broke. Like, his footwork is bad. His being on balance is bad. The way he rotates, he needs a lot of work with that. Jay, he's not super strong with the ball at all. Several times he just looks like he's bracing for contact that isn't there. And if there is contact, the ball comes flying out. Defensively, he's got a nice defensive stance. He's got a nice wingspan. But I don't like his defensive instincts. Like, he's very easy to get out of position, for sure.
The one thing that I noticed when I watched him was like, he just gets out of position.
Yes.
And like the defensive awareness isn't quite right. There. Again, he's still young. I'm not saying that's like something that's going to be detrimental to his career or anything like that. Right. But it's like for him, this being his second year in the G League, it's a learning process. And so that's something that he's going to have to learn over time now and when he gets drafted. But yeah, that is something that I did notice.
Absolutely. He's definitely going to have to clean that up. He reminds me a little bit of Ronald Holland. Mm-hmm. Not a lot, but I mean, he does remind me a little bit of Ronald Holland. Just in the you know, Ronald Holland was 6'8", also 6'9", a good ball handler, rough jump shot. But Holland was a much better facilitator and a better defender than Dink Pate. If you're going to be drafting Dink Pate, he's a project. He's so raw that he's not going to be contributing for at least two seasons. Like, if he's that raw.
Well, I'm just looking at the numbers part of it. Like, tip-off tournament, he was much better. And that's where I saw, like, a very, very brief sample. And that was, you know, November, December. And then I haven't watched him recently. So you've watched more of his recent tape than I have. But the tip-off tournament, like, it was better. But then you get into the regular season where there's obviously a bigger sample of games. The percentages just aren't there, 40%, 28 from deep.
Right.
The free throw percentage, I think, is a little bit deceiving.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just not this year, but last year as well. Like, he's only getting to the line 1.1 times a game. Like, what am I supposed to take from a percentage in that respect? Like, he shot 73% last year. That's in the high 50s this year. And it's just like, okay, yeah, when you just look at those numbers in and of itself, yeah, that's bad. But like, again, 58%, like, he's hardly getting to the free throw line. So like, how much of that am I supposed to actually like account for? You know right. what I mean? Like, obviously you want that percentage to be higher, no doubt, but I don't know what to make of it. There are some things like athletically him getting downhill with his handle. Like there's some stuff there that I have seen him that I have liked.
Right.
But to your point, it's going to be a project. He's still quite raw. And I'm glad he's doing this and he's going through this against other pros. Like, obviously these are also guys who were trying to make the NBA and aren't quite there. That's why they're in the G League, whether it's they're trying to get reps or whatever the case is. So like, he is doing this against other pros, but like, again, he's young and he's still very raw. And so like, it's not like he's going up against like college players and whatnot. So he's doing it against pros, but obviously you still want to see better, more consistent film on both ends of the floor. You want to see the shot get better. You want to see the defense get better on ball, off ball. But like, I think there is some, like, maybe there is something there. I would
preferred him to be in college. I think he'd get a better defensive pushback in college than he does in the G League, to be honest with you. G League defense. Yeah, but he's
now playing with more space. That he, like, he's playing on.
But he's still not getting to the free throw line playing with more space.
Right, but I'm just saying, like, he's getting acclimated to NBA spacing or NBA-ish spacing, maybe playing in an NBA-ish type.
But they don't even use him that way. He just stands in the corner, and then every once in a while he'll curl. Like, he'll get some on ball reps every once in a while. I don't see the development coming from the G League like that. I really don't. When you look at people that have come from the G League, not very many of them were on ball like creators, or they come in and it's like, wow, look at their ability to run and facilitate offense. Like, I just don't see that. I don't see that kind of development in the G League. I mean, the Miami Heat probably have the best G League team, and so like, you'll get some of that from that system and that group.
Well, they haven't been as good,
right? And that's lately. but that's my point, that like, it's very difficult to do. And if you look at his numbers, and some of these numbers are just disgusting, Like, he's shooting 27% from three on three attempts per game. He's shooting, what, he's averaging one free throw per game?
That's what I'm saying, yeah. Like, I don't know what to take from that.
One assist per game? I mean, his percentages, his free throw rate, his win shares, like, all his advanced metrics, dude, they're rough, dude. They are rough.
Better than they were last year.
Better than they were. So I guess my long story short is I don't see him as a first round pick. I don't.
Oh, yeah.
He's a second round project.
Yeah. I was going to squeeze it in, but like, I was just like, I don't think this would be a guy that I would take in the first round.
No. Yeah, I definitely don't see that.
I just wouldn't. Sorry.
I mean, the best ball handler feel for the game people to come out of the G League in a while was the Thompson brothers, right?
Well, they were overtime elite.
Overtime elite, that's true. They were an overtime elite. All right, so there we go. I mean, there really isn't very many people that come out of the G League and then you're like, oh, they got a much better feel for the game coming out of the G League. I just haven't seen that.
There's a Scoot Henderson joke. That can read. No, I'm just kidding.
I mean, I'm not. I wanted to talk about some comparison things that I've seen around the NBA lately. Before we talk about the matchup, well, it'll kind of segue into the matchup tonight. I remembered my Colin Murray Boyles conversation I had on the internet that is going to blow your mind about his comparison someone made. So we'll start with the Colin Murray Boyles because someone told me his handle at his size and physicality and athleticism has not been seen in the NBA since Zion Williamson. And Paolo,
no comment.
Yeah, and Paolo Banchero. No comment? You don't have any thoughts on that?
Well, it's just like the part that I struggle with comparisons. People do this every year, every draft cycle.
Right.
It's frustrating. It's annoying.
Right.
I don't know if they're talking about traits from college. Like, if you're just comparing these guys. Not saying, okay, let me just preface by saying, not saying I would agree with this if it was in college versus the pro or whatever.
Right, right.
But like, I don't know if they're talking about traits from like, okay, when Paolo was at Duke or Zion was at Duke or whatever the case is.
Mm-hmm.
Or if it's right now, like in the NBA, like right now, Paolo Banchero or Zion Williamson.
Do you think he has not that, that kind of ceiling with those traits to be those guys?
I don't know what they're talking about.
I got you.
I don't like. I don't hate Colin Murray Boyles' handle.
I don't hate it.
With all due respect to him, I don't think it's a Zion Paolo.
No!
College or in the pro.
Right.
It's just, I can't do it. Like, comparisons.
I can't compare those players together in the same sentence in any way. Like, it's just...
Right. Well, yeah. Both were much better prospects. Both were much better.
They're much better athletes as well. Like,
yeah, athletes. Not that... Like, there was some Murray Boyles stuff where it's just like, wow, he's actually... Like, that's an athletic move, or that's something that, like, I wouldn't expect from him at 6'7". Like, I was watching the Missouri game earlier today, and he had a putback. Like, a legit putback at 6'7". I was just like, for someone as stocky as he is at 6'7", that's not something I expect.
Yeah.
Not to say he's a vertical athlete, because
he isn't. Zion, right? Like
Zion, when he was coming out of Duke, was like a 99 percentile athlete for his size, strength,
freak athlete,
so on and so forth. I don't need to rehash Zion Williamson to the people who know who Zion Williamson is. He was a freak. Same thing with Paolo. Like not 99 percentile, but like he was a very good athlete for someone of his size, strength. The way he moved, like it was just different.
You know who Zion I compared?
Obviously is a much, 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 much better athlete than than both of those guys.
You know who I said that Boyles is closer to than either of those guys? And I'm not a comparison type of guy, but if you're going to compare him to somebody, he's closer to Horace Walker than
Jairus Walker.
Whatever, Jairus Walker, that's guy. Jairus Walker and Zion and Paolo Banchero. I do that every time with Walker. I do it every time.
I've seen a couple people think like Naz Reid ? Is like, I was like, okay, if he develops a shot, sure.
But if you're taking like a Naz Reid type, it's very rare for players to develop the 3-point shot the way Naz has.
Yeah.
And the feel for the game that he has going to the basket at that size. Murray Boyles on less than one attempt per game is shooting like 26% from three.
Right? He's not like everything with him is around the rim. That's why
everything.
See, I think you and I have talked about this on air, off air. The biggest consternation with me, there's some stuff about Murray Boyles that I like.
Right.
Like, I think I like him more than you do, just in the sense of like, okay, I think he can somewhat be a switchable defender at the NBA.
Right.
I'm not saying he's going to be guarding like premier guards or anything, but like,
right.
I like him in switch much better than I like him in drop. And I think that's more malleable in today's NBA than it would be in the past. Okay. Yeah. I like some of his short role playmaking. I like some of the decisions that he does make when he is like, you know, within that 10-foot range, whether he catches it in the post, whether he catches it just off a pick, like normal screen and roll. Like right. there's some short role decision making that I like.
Yeah.
But to me, when he's looking to score, he is predictable.
Yes.
And that's something that I can't shake when I'm doing these evals, because it's like, when he's going right, he wants to get back to that. He wants to get back to his left, and he wants, because he always wants to go left. He always wants to use that left hand. And like, one of my big critiques of him specifically is like, okay, you have to develop a right hand. You have to use your right hand at some point, because that's going to be scouted at the next level. It's going to be scouted better than these college teams are right now in the SEC, which is just a war every single night.
I agree.
And it's just like, and then everything with him is coming at the rim, and it's like, okay, I would feel so much better about this if you were 3 inches taller.
Right.
But you're not. Like, he does a very good job of attacking space that's provided to him.
Yes.
And he does a very good job finishing through contact. But when it comes to you projecting his NBA future, he's going to be going up against NBA level athletes that are bigger, stronger, and faster than these guys that he's going up against in college. And so that's where it's just like, I have questions about his offensive game outside of like, do I think he can be a functional NBA player? Sure. But like, I need to see him shoot a little bit more for me to feel a little bit better about his ceiling.
Right.
At the next level. Cause it's like, not to say he can't develop a shot, but he hasn't improved his shot in his 2 years in college.
He's going to have to
be working with an NBA coach at some point to develop that shot. Because that's something for someone at 6'7", he's going to need to develop. Because like modern-day fours need to know how to shoot.
I definitely agree with that. And one thing that's kind of a trend with him, he struggles against teams that have a guy that is going to be more just as physical, but can guard on the perimeter. Like, he struggles with those types of matchups that can push him off his spot, and they can also guard him off the dribble. Like, if you look at him against Mississippi State, he played 30 minutes and had 5 points. You know what I mean? Like, he didn't have any assist because his game is so perimeter oriented to get to the basket, and he can't score outside the lane. Like, he starts outside the lane, but he can't really shoot, so he doesn't really score outside the lane.
There was one part when I watched Missouri and then Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And or at least that's what I did today. And the thing with him is like, he does that thing where like, I know you and I are in like the heat circles, but you know where I'm going with this. Like when Bam catches it like 15 feet.
Right.
And he's like, he's like, you know, jab step, and he's thinking about shooting, but doesn't, whether he goes into DHO or whatever the case is. Right. Murray Boyles does that same thing, but it's always like, he's going to go to his left or he's going to go to his right and then try to go back to his left or whatnot. Like, when he's around like the 15-foot range, something that I wrote down in my notes was like, okay, I want to see him develop. Not even like, we don't even have to talk about him developing a 3-point shot yet.
Right.
Just develop some sort of an in-between game and then continue to expand while obviously improving your, you know, your free throw percentage.
For sure.
I think he's around 70% conference play, which is better than I would have expected. But like, if you develop that respect of like being a consistent mid-range shooter, okay, now then we can talk about, you know, him above the break and him, you know, spacing from the 3-point line in the corners, this, that, and the other. Not to say, again, he can obviously develop that, but
that's, I would feel much better about
it if he actually does do that. And that's something that I want to see him do, you know.
But that's why I have so much trouble putting him in the top 15 like that. Like, I don't think he's a top 15 guy because he doesn't have any counters. He's undersized. He isn't a super vertical athlete. Like,
yeah,
I have a lot of questions
there. He does some stuff where I'm just like, okay, I like that a lot. Like, there were a couple times where like, he'll just come out of nowhere defensively and just completely swat someone into the third row. And it's just like, whoa, like, okay. Like, that's, again, for someone who's not a great vertical athlete, like, that was,
it's good timing, and he's got a really long wingspan is what it is.
Yeah. Like, he moves his feet well defensively, and it's just like, okay, like, I can see some of the stuff here, but like, if I'm trying to figure out your role offensively, you're very limited what you can do outside of your passing and your playmaking. Like, that's something where it's just like, again, I have a ton of questions. There's some stuff that he does that I like, but then there's other stuff where I'm just like, I want to see you develop some of this before I will give you this standing.
Not so, let's play this game. Who would you rather have? And we'll start around the 15th area. Would you rather have Liam McNeely or Boyles?
I would probably go with McNeely.
Same here. Ben Sarif or Boyles? You haven't watched Sarif.
Yeah.
I'll answer for you. I'd take Ben Sarif. Thomas Sorber or Boyles?
I have Sorber much higher than Boyles, so Sorber.
Jace Richardson.
Jace.
Filon.
I would probably lean Filon.
Okay. Rashear Fleming.
I would probably lean Fleming.
Danny Wolf.
I have Wolf around where I have Sorber, so Wolf.
Okay. Do you see where I'm going with this?
Well, you and I feel the same way about Boyles. We're much lower on him than the consensus.
I don't see what the consensus sees at all. Like, at all. I don't see it.
This isn't new news between you and I.
No, not at all. Not at all. But yeah,
I think I have Boyles like in my most recently updated board. I think I have him in like the 20 range somewhere, early 20s.
Yeah.
But that's also with not all the prospects on it.
Correct. And you haven't scouted any international guys yet. So that also could change.
Yeah. I think Troyer is the one guy I have on there.
Gotcha.
Of like 40 players.
He's a very good facilitator, that Troyer. We got Steven. Big shout out to you in the chat. Guru Son. Appreciate you guys. Ryan stopping by. I try to answer you guys as we're talking. If you haven't done so yet, don't forget to hit the like button. It helps the algorithm push out our stream to more people when you hit that like button. Also, when you chat amongst yourselves, the algorithm says, hey, there's stuff going on. Let me send this out to more people. So you really help us out just by interacting. You don't have to even spend any money. It's free. But I appreciate you. I always take the engagement. I wanted to talk about another comparison I saw on Twitter that really just blew my mind. Ace Bailey is basically, they said, comparable to Michael Porter Jr. Like, they're the same type of player, same player. And I was blown away by that comparison. I mean, their frames are the same, like their height, weight, wingspan. I think they're completely and wildly different players. What are your thoughts on that comparison, Matt?
That's like the most common comparison for Ace.
Yeah.
Again, I don't know if they're talking about it with this person. I mean, I've seen it a bunch, so it's not like just one person. But like,
right.
Pre-injury MPJ, I see it. post-injury, not quite as much, but in the sense that, like, irregardless of pre-injury, post-injury, I think Ace has obviously a higher ceiling. I think he's a better defender. I think he's a better shot blocker. I do see him being a better three-level scorer, but just like right now, the traits of, you know, I've had questions about Michael Porter Jr.'s ability to get to the rim.
Right.
I have questions about Ace Bailey's ability to get to the rim.
See, I have less questions about Ace's dribbling and handle than I would MPJ. But that's where we differ on this.
Yeah. But it's also like, again, I want to preface by saying Ace has a much higher ceiling than
right.
Michael Porter Jr. But that's also, I'm not also saying Michael Porter, like that's not a knock on Michael Porter Jr. Like I think Michael Porter Jr. is a quite good basketball player. He was one of the most important players on a championship team, considering how many back injuries and back surgeries he's had over just a short part of his life. The fact that he's averaging like 20 and 7 or whatever it is at the NBA level on very, very good efficiency from multiple levels of the floor. Like he's quite a good basketball player.
He is. He's a very talented basketball player.
If that's a baseline, like if that's your floor for Ace Bailey, that's a perfectly viable, like I would take that, but that's also not what we're talking about. I think again, some of the traits that Ace has, it's like Michael Porter Jr., but I obviously do think Ace has the higher ceiling. I think he has a better floor to an extent.
Right.
Because again, I think the separator for me is the defense. And the playmaking. Like I think there's some more playmaking to Ace Bailey than there is to Michael Porter Jr.
I agree with that.
But they're like I think Ace has gotten better as a ball handler as the season's gone along, but I still have questions about it.
For sure.
And I just think Ace is a better, like, in-between shot maker than Michael Porter Jr. is. But I do think Michael Porter Jr. is, like, a good shot maker from, like, 2.5 levels. When Michael Porter Jr. is able to get to the rim, he's efficient.
But that's few and far between, right?
Yeah. No. And it's difficult for me to compare that. It's just like pre-injury MPJ was like, you know, top 2 player in his class. He was touted as like the next guy. Same with Ace. Ace was, you know, top 2, top 3 player in his high school class. And obviously we're seeing it unfold at the college level. Michael Porter Jr. played 3 games in college.
Right.
And those obviously 3 games, like I don't know how much the back had to do with it, but like, it's such a small sample to where it's difficult to evaluate. But then when you're talking about pre-injury MPJ, you're talking about him in high school.
Right.
Well, how am I supposed to do high school versus like it's a difficult discussion to have with MPJ specifically. Like I wish he was just able to play out his freshman year and then we could compare it.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays, decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa, got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments, Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels, Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This is Michael Rosenbaum. Hey, folks, let me tell you that drinking and driving is a decision that will change your whole world. Things will never be the same once you get a DUI, because legal fees and time in court are just the beginning. Getting into a crash is another way your world could be irreversibly changed after drinking and driving. Your vehicle may not be the only thing that gets damaged in that crash. You could face a life-altering injury or even death. But you're not the only one who could face those consequences. Your decision to drink and drive could permanently change someone else's world, whether you injure them or leave their loved ones grieving. The next time you're out drinking, call a rideshare, a taxi, a sober friend, or a designated sober driver. Always plan for a safe ride home. The only decision that will change your world for the better is the decision to call for a sober ride. It's never worth it to drive drunk. Don't risk it. Drive sober. Or get pulled over. Paid for by NHTSA.
But that's so again, that's the problem that I have with comparisons. But like, I think it's just traits based. At least that's the discourse that I'm trying to have.
Absolutely.
But it's difficult for sure.
Now I can see how you could see it in that fashion. I see it a little differently. I think that Ace Bailey's handle, his ability to the wiggle that he has in his game, the way that he bounces into his shot from anywhere on the floor and it's got a high probability of going in. I think he's up there with Carmelo Anthony college wise in terms of ability to make shots and tough shots. I think there's definitely a lot more playmaking on the bone as well. I mean, if his teammates were any better, like role players in college, I think you would even see even more efficiency out of him and Harper.
He has more space.
He would have more space. He'd have less attention that people wouldn't be able to cheat off him. He regularly and routinely is shooting 37% from three and 47 or 46% from the field over top of two different defenders or three. Like, I mean, it's just unbelievable, his shot making ability. So I found that comparison to be wild to me. I get the optics of it, the height, weight, shot, shooting ability from deep, but I think that's where the comparison ends for me.
It's how you and I have had the discussion of about like he's like shades of a player.
That's right. Shades
of MPJ. Shades of MPJ. Obviously.
My bad.
What?
I said, my bad. Continue.
Oh. No, I was just going to say like shades of Ace Bailey, or not shades. Of
Ace Bailey, that's right.
Shades of Michael Porter Jr. Like that's the best way I would describe it.
But right.
Again, I think to each player, they're their own.
No, I absolutely agree with that. One other guy I cannot escape this podcast without talking about, and Matt knows everything, Adele knows some things, says Amir from
Miami. I don't know anything.
Matt,
what's going on, Amir?
Definitively says he knows nothing.
I John don't
Snow. But we can't get off this podcast or move on to tonight's big matchup without talking about Trey Johnson again. And we talked Trey Johnson a lot on this show. Trey Johnson went absolutely bananas last night for Texas. Trey Johnson is going to be a very difficult player to keep out of my top six. And I love Con Knipple. I love Malawach. I just don't know how you pass on Trey Johnson. His work ethic and his intensity and his ownership of every moment that he believes is my fault if I don't make it, like he's expecting to make every shot, is unbelievable. He's unbelievable, in my opinion. Guru Sun says, Trey is a volume scorer and only scores on jump shots, non-passer, and a bad defender. That's where I have to disagree with you, Guru Sun. I think Trey Johnson is a competitive defender. I happen to also believe that he's got more facilitating ability than what he's been able to show at Texas, because he is tasked with being their scorer. Like, he is their scorer. There isn't much help outside of his game to make buckets, make plays. He is the offense. So with his usage rate being 30%, and he's shooting 44%, 45% from the field and 39% from three, 88% from the free throw line. That type of efficiency is unbelievable. Still getting you three rebounds per game, 2.5 assists per game, not turning the ball over either. Only 1.5 turnovers per game. I think Trey Johnson is going to be a very tough guy to keep out of the top six. Stephen Fine says, I like Trey Johnson. So do I. Has your opinion changed at all on Trey, Matt?
If you just want to hear my opinion on Trey, just go back and listen to our last pod, because I went on a rant about he's just more than a scorer.
He's definitely more than a scorer. His offensive box plus minus is outrageous.
Guys, let's not lose sight of this just for a quick second. He's leading the SEC in scoring at like 18 years old. The SEC, this year's SEC, is one of the toughest conferences in recent memory. Obviously, the efficiency in the SEC play hasn't been great. 42%, 35 from deep, 90 from the free throw line. But he's being game planned against on a nightly basis. And he's still finding a way to dismantle SEC defenses while actually showing some playmaking juice. Sure, there's questions about his defense. I've lamented about that before. I don't think he's a great screen navigator. That's something he's going to have to improve. Off ball, sometimes he gets a little bit lost, but like there is some, like he tries defensively. I think he's in the right positions more often than not. But his offensive, his tool bag, I think is better than people give him credit for. And he's doing so, again, as a freshman, against SEC defenses every night while being game planned against. And guess what? He's the sole reason why, no disrespect to guys like Arthur Kaluma or anything like that, any of his teammates, this team is on the bubble because of him.
Absolutely.
And like
his leadership, too, which can't be discounted.
There's much talent there. There isn't much talent there.
Right.
And so it's like this, they obviously last night's loss wasn't great against an Arkansas team that, while they have been better, I still don't think Arkansas is another team on the bubble. I think Texas is better than Arkansas just in a vacuum. But obviously last night that wasn't the case. So maybe I'm wrong by saying that. But let's, like, Trey Johnson is more than just a scorer.
Absolutely. And like I said, the leadership part can't be discounted. For an 18-year-old freshman in the SEC, he is the heart and soul of that team. And any huddle that they need, he's the guy talking in that huddle, getting people together, organizing everybody, taking responsibility for what happens. His advanced metrics, his PER, is 21.5. League average is 15. I mean, his efficiency numbers are outrageous for a freshman. Like, it's just unbelievable, this kid. So I'm a big fan of his, and I can't wait to see more. But let's talk about tonight's matchup. Danny Wolf versus Dylan Harper and Ace Bailey. What are you looking forward to seeing out of these two programs clashing for these prospects?
I mean, hopefully it's a good game, just because Michigan's good and Rutgers isn't. I mean, I'm not trying to beat around the bush. It's just, I'm very interested to see how guys like Harper and Bailey navigate Michigan's defense, which is one of the better defenses in the Big Ten.
Right.
And then Danny Wolf, just continue to do what you're doing, man.
Absolutely.
Rebounding, shot blocking, facilitating, ball handling. He's a weird dude for someone who's 7 foot. And I say that in a complimentary way. Yeah, just everyone. I hope everyone has, like, I hope everyone has a good game.
Yeah, I would know what else to say. I would like to have all, you know, all the prospects to have a good game. But what I'm really looking forward to is to see how Danny Wolf holds up on the defensive side of the ball when he gets switched out on Harper or Bailey, because he will be switched out at some point on both of those guys. Because I don't know if you've watched, and not you specifically, Matt, but the audience, I don't know how many of you have watched Michigan games. They put Danny Wolf out there on the perimeter. They do not hide him, even though he's a 7-footer. Yeah. And I really like his disposition, even though at times he does touch the earth because he gets moving in a couple of different directions and it's hard for that 7-foot, 250 pounds to stop. So he's going to have to continue working on the defensive end. But I'm also interested in seeing how Ace Bailey and Dylan Harper handle a team of the caliber of Michigan. And are they going to be able to continue to put up points and rebounds and assists and lead this Rutgers program, even though they're not going to make the tournament. I'm also looking for Danny Wolf to continue to get his turnovers down. They are going down. His turnovers are, you know, he was at like 5.5 per game at one point. Not 5.5, 4.5 per game at one point. He's down to 3.3 turnovers per game. So he is consistently getting better at that. But again, we've waxed poetic about Danny Wolf a lot. Let me ask you this. In the last couple of times you've watched Danny Wolf, do you think he's gotten better at shooting off the dribble? Or is he still struggling in that area? Does he still need to prove more to you off the bounce?
I struggle with it, but I would also just prefer if he didn't do it.
That's going to be tough at the pro
level. I know. Well, I know, but like, I just don't know if, considering how he's like, I'm not very high on him shooting off the dribble.
Right.
I think he's gotten better as the season's gone along, but I'd just rather him be, if I'm relying on him to be a 3-point shooter, I would rather just him be one off the spot up
guy. He is a better spot up guy. That's for sure. You know, what's really odd about him, his free throw shooting is poor. And a lot of it is mechanics. Like, his mechanics are odd. Like, he brings the ball from really low to really high, and it's from the other side of his face. Yeah, from the other side of his face. So he really needs to correct that. And I think if he gets in the lab, really works on his mechanics, I think he could be a very good shooter. I think he's got enough touch and feel for shooting on the outside, because he's shooting 35% from three on three attempts per game. That's a good rate for a 3-point rate for a guy of his size. And at 7 foot, 250 pounds, he's just a unicorn in how he moves. So I'm intrigued. I'm very intrigued. Last question before we get out of here on Danny Wolf. We've talked about this before. What is the highest possible selection you would take him at? Where is the cutoff where you're like, nope, it's too high?
It's got to be somewhere like 10, 11, 12 range.
That's definitely too high for me. Absolutely. I agree.
Like, that's where I'd be like, not sure about that one, Chief. That's kind of where I would be at with him. But because that's where I have him on my board.
Yeah.
But I also haven't updated that in a bit.
Yeah, we're going to have to do another one of those pods at some point, because I haven't updated mine either.
Yeah, so I've moved him throughout. I've moved him up as the season's gone along.
Right.
So I have him right now in the range, I believe, like I right around the Sorber. I think Queen's right there too. I have him ahead of Queen, but like they're all kind of like in that same territory.
Yeah.
So I think the highest that I would be like maybe the late lottery would be like the highest place.
Right.
Like 13, 14, maybe.
Cause here's my thing when we talk about that. Like, it's gonna come down to what a team wants, like what they need. Cause once you get out of the top 10, it's a crapshoot, really.
Might be top 5 this year. Once you get out of the top 5, it's like, well, all bets are off, baby. Let's see what happens. I can't wait for Colin Murray Boyles to go 7.
I will lose my ever-loving mind if he goes 7th. Steven,
I won't, because it won't be on my team, so that's fine.
Steven Fine says, Wolf is a late first-round pick for me, 20 to 25. Guru Sun says, Trey can really shoot, so he won't be a bust, but I have questions. Now, those are all legitimate and valid opinions there. For sure. Here's why I say Wolf won't go 20 to 25. This is why I think he goes higher than people were giving him credit for. He's 7 foot, 250 pounds, and can dribble like a guard. It's just the planet theory. There's not very many guys like that walking around. I can see a GM being like, I can take a chance on that guy, because if he hits, he's a unicorn.
Well, to my point earlier, or to your point as well, would you be surprised if the team in the top, if the team in the late top 10 was just like, that's a dart throw I'm willing to take?
Yes.
Especially if they have multiple picks.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Like I could see it be like teams at 9 being like, I like that Danny Wolf guy.
Yeah, I could see that at 9. I mean, I wouldn't take him over Asa Newell, but I could see that.
I would not. But they're also like pretty close on my board, I think.
They are, because they both have their warts, and yes. but they're both also very talented, very unique skill sets at the same time. But here's what I would say in terms of that. Again, that 7'250" handles like a guard. If you have multiple picks and all these other guys are just small, again, it's that planet theory. There's just only so many of those guys walking around. You take a chance on that type of guy. Like Colin Murray Boyles, you can find that archetype, that body type every draft. And not all of them hit. Very few of them hit.
Like Zion, dude.
That's right. He's Zion Williamson. Somebody said Derek Queen is they said he's like Naz Reid, right? Isn't that the comparison that's going around now? That he's potentially could be like Naz Reid. 6'10", 250, if he gets a jump shot. I don't see that at all. I mean, that's a lot of hoping and praying and wishing. Like,
I feel more comfortable about Sorber's jump shot than I do Queen's.
Absolutely.
Even though I like some of like the playmaking, the ball handling, the like hit the footwork.
Right.
That's stuff I like from Queen, but
am I the only one that doesn't like Queen's disposition? Like I just find his body language and at times he just doesn't always try.
Well, no, here this is what I was going to actually segue into that. Did you see what his head coach said?
No.
About like if he was like a white European, you'd go number one overall or something like that.
I did not hear that. That's hilarious, actually.
Yeah, his head coach said that like a week or two ago. Very funny comment. Not true at all.
Definitely not true at all.
But like the thing, because I think it was Sam Vecenie made this point where he was just like maybe he would be, you know, higher on people's boards if you didn't try to scheme him out of everything defensively.
Right.
Because it's like how they do like the zone and like how they want him, you know, as close as possible to the rim.
Yep.
Even though he's not a good rim protector, nor does he even try on most rim protection opportunities.
Correct.
Which is a little bit of a problem, which one of the many reasons why I have questions about him defensively, but like, the scene he was like, yeah, maybe he'd be a little bit higher if you didn't try to like pre-switch or do anything to not have him in the action defensively. So I thought that was pretty funny.
What also is funny to me is that you talk about like he would be the number one pick. He averages 2 assists a game, right? Not terrible, not great. But he also averages more turnovers than he does assists, 2.4. Like, if you're going to be a guy with 25% usage rate and you can't shoot threes, you're going to have to be able to be a good facilitator. You're going to have to be a hub, so to speak.
This is where I have the difficulty with the assist or turnover stuff. I do think his playmaking is better than that.
Show me.
Because like he does like live dribble stuff. He can operate as a hub. That's kind of what he's done this entire year.
Right.
I think where he gets caught is when he tries to like, there are times where he attacks a closeout.
Yeah.
And someone just swipes down and gets it. Like there are times where I would watch film and like, that would happen where like he would get caught in traffic just a little bit. That's where obviously the turnovers would accumulate. And so like that's that would track to an extent, but in terms of like his passing ability.
Yeah.
I think he has a good pass. I think his passing ability is better than the assist to turnover ratio. The assist to turnover ratio gives him credit for. And like, that's the case with some prospects, not all of them.
Right. Okay. I mean, I'll have to keep an eye out to see if I see more facilitating chops in there, because I really don't see it, to be honest with you. His ability to navigate in the NBA is going to be interesting to me. Like, is he going to be able to? Yeah, is he going to be able to keep up defensively without aggregating fouls? Without, because he doesn't, like I said, and he also doesn't try all the time. So are coaches going to be able to put up with that? He doesn't block shots. I mean, I don't know, man.
It's difficult with him from a scheme perspective too, if you're just thinking about it defensively, because it's like,
right,
he's 6'10 and is a below average vertical athlete. He gets bit with his movement more north to south than he does east west. And so when he gets put in drop, when he can't stick to the paint or near the paint, like, I don't know. I don't really trust his ability to hold up defensively in that respect. Cause like, that's where it's just like, that's where my biggest question is, like, okay, it was the same conversations that we had with Edie last year, except that we had it where we're like, Edie is obviously big enough and he can make up for it with his gigantic size, but he can't move.
Right.
With Queen, it's the same thing, but he's now an undersized big, not an oversized big. And so like, there are times where I watch Queen where I'm like, okay, like, obviously he's not going to be switching out of, like, are they going to hedge him? Like, I don't know what I don't know what the real answer for is. Like, obviously super skilled offensively, but there's so many questions defensively where I'm just like, I don't know what to do with it.
Right.
Cause again, like, he's just not, he doesn't move. I mean, again, it's more like north to south. Like, if you put him in a backpedaling situation, that's where I have my biggest questions. Cause he's not like seven. Like, if he was 7 foot, 7 foot one, 7 foot two, I'd feel a little bit better, just because it's like, okay, there are plenty of bigs like that. But again, not very often you run into a guy who's an undersized big who can't play a drop.
I agree, because like,
sometimes he'll create deflections with his hands and whatnot. Like,
he has good hands. He does have good hands.
But that's the best part. And like, and you can't bank on that, though. And you just can't. I need to see him be better positionally. Just overall with his technique, with his movement and drop.
Yes.
That's the biggest part about it. Cause it's like, he's not someone that you're going to switch out onto the perimeter. There are times where he stops moving east to west, but like, this is against college guards. This isn't against NBA guards. It's just, that's just not going to happen.
Right.
And so I feel like once he gets to the NBA level, he's going to be put in action a lot. And that's where I'm like, that's where I have my biggest qualms with him defensively. And I'm sure there are plenty of bigs who have those same concerns that are okay. But like, and he obviously makes up for some of it with the skill that he has offensively, again, with the ball handling, passing. He's still in between touches, still inconsistent. But like, he makes up for some of it, but like, is it enough? I don't know.
Right.
I genuinely don't know. He's a fun player to watch offensively.
Defensively, he is.
That's where I have my biggest question. And that's where I will continue to have questions until he shows me otherwise over his NBA, over the early portions of his NBA career, if he is able to show me that.
I enjoy watching him offensively, but also I have questions offensively in the NBA in a pace and space type league. When he's not a vertical athlete, how well is that going to translate if you can't shoot?
His role is going to be limited.
Right. I agree. So if his role offensively is going to be limited, he's defensively challenged. I think he may be going way too high in a lot of these mocks and the national attention that he's getting. That's my overall point.
I'm completely with you, but teams are gonna look at the skill offensively.
Right.
That's what they're gonna look at.
All right.
I'm not saying I agree with that, but teams are gonna look at that and be like, yeah, I'm willing to take a dart throw despite the concerns, A, B, C, whatever.
Right.
And once you get past, you know, to your point earlier, once you get past 10, 15, like, teams are going to look at, like, okay, he can do this, this, and this. That's what we're taking a chance on.
Right. And he's, like, you know, only 20 years old come draft time. So there's potential growth and upside there. All right. Well, with that, guys, I can't wait to continue talking the NBA draft throughout the season. March Madness is right around the corner. Keep an eye out. We're going to continue to try to communicate with playback.tv/hoopsprofile, which is our playback room, to see if we're going to be able to carry some of our viewership over on playback to bring some of you with us. So more to come on that. And I'm really excited for the NBA draft. We're going to have coverage on the playback rooms from 5RSN, the 5 Reasons Sports Network that we're part of for the Miami Heat, Matt and I. So that's playback.tv/5RSN for that. And then we're also going to have, of course, coverage from our YouTube channel that we're going to simulcast as well. So we're going to continue to work on all of that stuff. Thank you for showing up. Don't forget to like and subscribe. Matt, where can these people find you, follow you, and get more of your work?
At @NPH_A24_, that's where you can find me at on Twitter. You can find me at HowHoops.com, MountainWestConnection.com, VendettaSportsMedia.com, as well as playback.tv/5RSN, where Adele and I and others from the 5 Reasons Sports Network, we watch the Miami Heat, cry, laugh, mostly cry nowadays, laugh, get mad at. All, just a very wide range of emotions when it comes to watching the Miami Heat live. And you can do it with us if you come join. Come check it out.
Absolutely. Well, I appreciate you, Matt, as always. I'm Digital Adele. You can find me on social media under that same moniker anywhere social media is found. Don't forget to like and subscribe. Also, become a channel member for only $2.99. Really helps us out. And also, the podcast itself, if for whatever reason you don't get to watch it live, you can find it on iHeartRadio, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, anywhere podcasts are found. So I will see you next time.